Live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Glink Show live on Sunday 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750. Call in now. The lines are wide open. Well, there's one person holding, but the rest of the lines are wide open. Love to talk to you today. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. My website, the new and improved ThinkGlink.com. ThinkGlink.com. Don't forget to check out my blogging over at MoneyWatch.com. I have been blogging like crazy this week. There has been so much real estate news. And everything from apparently, and I didn't blog about this yet, but I will, sellers are still overpricing their properties 10 to 15%, according to the National Association of Realtors. Then there is the whole news that the realtors have actually been overcounting the number of homes that have sold. Not so good. There's some good news for jumbo mortgages. We're going to talk about that. Some sort of good news for the housing industry. This week, Countrywide, which is now owned by Bank of America, is going to give $108 million to homeowners who were overcharged. I've got a new way to fix the foreclosure process crisis. There is so much, real estate news. And then you go back to business, and it's all about the debt plan. It's all about what the heck is going to happen here so that the government doesn't allow the U.S. to go into default. Absolutely unbelievable that we have gotten this far down the path. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then, hello, stock market up about 200 and something points this week. It's a big news all the way around. Really interesting. Looks like Greece has been rescued, although it's going to do a strategic default. You've heard that term before, right? On some of its debts. And then, of course, the bottom line is still nobody's hiring, and the unemployment rate is now 9.2% in this country. So, a really interesting mixed bag to talk about. 404-872-0750 with your questions as well, and we're happy to do it all. I think we're going to start with a little bit of real estate, and we're going to start, although this week we've got the new Case-Shiller report that's going to come out, the S&P Case-Shiller report. It's always good to start with a little good news. So this week we finally had what passes for good news in the housing industry, or at least what passes for good news in the fifth year of the housing crisis. So according to the statistics released this week, building permits issued in June of 2011 were up 2.5% for May, and crucially, they were up 6.5% or 6.7% from June of 2010. What we've been seeing is that the number of building permits have been going up slightly from the month before, but we're not actually seeing a year-to-year upgrade. This time, we were. Okay. Permits for privately owned units experienced the gains 2.5%. Privately owned housing starts jumped over 14% in May to 629,000. The difference between a permit and a start is, of course, a permit is where you pull a permit and you haven't actually done any work. Housing starts where you got shovel in the ground. So that's up 17% from a year ago. Now, on the downside, housing completions, meaning you pull a certificate of occupancy, experienced a drop of nearly 2% from May and a loss of over 39% from June of 2010. Now, June of 2010 was right when we were finishing up with the home buyer tax credits, and there was definitely a push on that, and we were definitely seeing an increase in housing sales because of it. So dropping down nearly 40%, not so good. But anyway, that's what passes for good news these days. Now, what about home prices? Well, according to the National Association of Realtors, they announced this week that, and this is kind of strange, they said existing home contract cancellation rates rise. What does that mean? People actually have a pending home sale, and that means that's something that they monitor. A number of people, they've entered into a contract, they've agreed on it, it's pending until they close. But some of those never make it, and those get canceled. And what they saw this month is that the cancellations of existing home sale contracts spiked, even though the prices were stable. So the good news is the prices were stable, but why the heck are people canceling their contracts? Sales were strongest in the Midwest and the South. They declined in the Northeast and the West. Single-family home sales were stable, but the condo sector weakened, and that's really where they saw some of those. Very interesting to watch that number and see what's going to go on with that canceled contract. And Lawrence Young, he's the National Association of Realtors chief economist, said, you know, it's just a very uneven recovery. Home sales had been trending up without the tax stimulus, but we're seeing an unusual spike in contract cancellation. 16% of National Association of Realtor members reported a sales contract was canceled in June, up from 4% in May. And the national housing prices pretty much stayed the same. And then, you know, from CoreLogic, it seems like it's a little hard to tell. So they said distressed sales increased by 0.8% in May compared to April, but year over year, they're still seeing a home price decline. And that's why this week, when we get the S&P Case-Shiller Index, we're going to get a little bit of a better track on what's going on. I will say that some people are selling houses. Our neighbors found a house. It had been on the market only, I think, 70 days or 60 days, 2 months. They made an offer. They're getting an offer in within 24 hours of listing their house. Of course, they have neighbors like us to advise them, Sam and me, on how to get their house ready for sale and get it priced. So maybe they have a little bit of an edge, but they're very excited, and we'll all find out a little bit later what kind of an offer that is. All right, 404-872-0750. It is 12 minutes past the hour. Let's go to the phones and see what's going on. Julie joins us on the line from Decatur. Hi, Julie.
Hi, I have a question regarding car rentals, in that I'm moving overseas and I'm not going to have car insurance stateside, and when I come back to the States, I'll be renting a car. And I've heard that you don't want to buy the car rental insurance, you're covered with your car rental insurance.
Well, but not for overseas. So overseas rentals are very different from national rentals.
Well, no, when I come back to the States,
yeah.
My plan was to rent a car when I'm in America to visit family and such.
Okay.
And I won't have a car here that is mine, so I won't have car insurance. And I was wondering, when I do rent a car stateside, do I need to buy the insurance?
It's a great question. What credit cards do you hold?
American Express, Visa, MasterCard.
You may be covered for that insurance from those credit cards. This is something that was very popular to offer about 5 to 10 years ago, and many of these many of the benefits that you get from these credit cards will include that car insurance, that excess car insurance. So what you want to do is you want to give your credit card companies a call, or you want to pull out your benefits package from them, but you probably don't have it anymore. So if you've had those cards for a while, I can't say I have mine. So you probably want to just call and talk to the customer service representative about the benefits that are included. They can probably direct you to a website, and you can ask those questions. Because if you are covered under one of those three credit cards, and I believe that some American Express cards, not all, do offer this, extra travel insurance and car insurance for rental cars, you might be covered, and then you don't have to buy the stuff at the counter.
Well, that's good to know. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Have a great trip abroad. 15 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. John joins us on the line from Roswell. Hi, John.
Yes, good morning, Liz. How are you this morning?
I'm great. What's going on with you?
Well, I have a question for you. I have a house that is fully paid for that I own, and my son wants to buy it from her. He's actually living in it now, and we've been talking about him just buying it. But I don't think he would qualify for a commercial loan these days.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm considering being the bank for him and actually, you know, selling him the house and holding the mortgage and let him pay me.
Great idea.
At the starting point with this, and I don't know exactly how to proceed as far as researching this goes. I know it can be complex, and it's fraught with tax and legal implications for both of us. So what would you suggest that I do as far as researching this and trying to find out if it's something that is reasonable for us to do?
Sure. First of all, John, this happens every day of the week, and it doesn't have to be terribly complicated. You will need an attorney to draw up the loan documents to make sure that you're protected, and then you will need to file those documents and in the public records office so that the world is unnoticed that you have a lien against the property for your son. you can even set up to submit his on-time payment records to the three credit reporting bureaus if you want to help boost his credit. All of this can be done pretty easily. Now, from the IRS, they just want to see that it's an arm's-length transaction, and that way he can write off the interest if he's able to. And that would just be, interest rates are so low right now that you could do 4.5% for him or 5% for him if you wanted to for 30 years, and nobody would blink an eye.
And that's one of the things that I want to capture in this, is for him to have that ability to write that off.
Sure. Well, of course, he's only going to have the ability to write it off if he itemizes under his federal income tax forms. So I don't know how expensive the house is, but 70-something percent of Americans do not itemize their mortgage interest deduction. You should also know that Congress is seriously considering limiting that deduction, even if he did qualify. It may not be for long. So it's certainly fine to set it up that way, but if the... if he's able to take as a standard deduction somewhere around $11,000, he may just not have more interest than that.
Mm-hmm.
Not when you're paying 4.5% or 5%. I don't know how expensive the house is. You'll want to figure out what you want to charge him for it. Now, if you want to start to give him that house, you can give him that house at $13,000 a year and set that up as part of the schedule. And if you want to give him or gift him the down payment for the house of $13,000, or if he's married, $26,000, you can have the lawyer write that in as well so that he goes into it with some serious equity. And that's it's a wonderful way to both get money or assets out of your estate, if that's an issue for you, and help him set up, you know, what you're trying to do. Now, if you're worried about him and you don't think he's maybe that stable, you're going to want to have a very different plan entirely. And that's why I think a real estate attorney who can help walk through these different issues with you and make sure you're fully compliant with the IRS requirements is a great idea. And, just pay usually a flat fee. It shouldn't take all that long. It's a pretty standard loan document. But you want somebody who really understands how to do this.
And do you know of anybody that I could contact?
Well, I don't ever recommend individuals, but let me tell you how to find the right person. You can go to your local bar association, or in your case, Roswell, probably the Atlanta Bar Association would be the closest one, and ask for the head of the real estate committee. This is the person who coordinates all the extending education for the real estate lawyers in Atlanta who belong to the bar. You could do the same thing with the Georgia bar if you wanted to. So call the head of the real estate committee, tell that person what you're looking for and how you want to handle it, and then that person will either help you or they'll refer you to the right attorney. And that's why I like going to the head of the committee. If this were an estate tax issue, I would give you the same thing. I would say go to the head of the estate tax committee or the estate committee, tell that person what you're looking for, and then you'd get a referral directly from the source, because they know all the really good attorneys, the ones who are continually doing a lot of education and connecting with each other and staying up to date. They know who's been around for a long time. It's a great way to not just get some anonymous referrals, but hopefully get somebody who's really good for you and what you're looking for.
Well, excellent.
Well, let me know how it goes, John. It sounds like it's going to be just fine, though.
Yeah, I think he's a pretty good kid. He's got a solid job. He works hard, so I'm not worried about that. I just want to try to, make it. He's a young man, so give him something to start building his, additional credit ratings with, and
I think it's a wonderful thing to do, and to be able to provide that information to the credit reporting bureaus to help boost his credit is going to be even better. So I wish you a lot of luck. Be sure to let me know what happens. It's 20 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Kling Show. Our number 404-872-0750. Happy to take your calls here on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elyse Kling is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elyse Kling Show. We are playing Amy Winehouse today in celebration of life, short life. She was found yesterday by London police in her home. Very, very sad story of a hugely, hugely talented woman who just clearly couldn't conquer her own demons. But we celebrate her music. It was really fantastic today here on the Elyse Kling Show. 404-872-0750. Linda joins us on the line from Athens. Hi, Linda.
Hey there, Elyse.
Hey, happy summer. What's going on?
Well, I have a question. I was wondering about, since the mortgage rates at this time are still quite low, mine is currently at 5.75%.
Mm-hmm.
How do you approach your mortgage company? I'm in good standing with the same company. I have my credit card, my auto insurance, my home equity line of credit. My credit score, I believe, is pretty darn good. So what are the kinds of points that you bring out when you're asking them to consider lowering the rate?
Well, what are you really asking for? Do you have an FHA loan?
A 30-year fixed mortgage.
Right. Is it an FHA loan or conventional loan? You don't know? Conventional. Okay. So they may, if you call the lender's retention department and you're in good standing, and you say to them, I'm thinking about refinancing, I mean, you could refinance the loan to probably a 15-year at under 4% if you wanted to. And that's,
uh-huh.
I don't know how many years you have, how many years do you have left on your loan?
About 17.
So you could refinance to a 15-year, save 2 years, and you could pay all the costs. But if what you're asking me is, how do you get them to just lower the rate and not charge you anything? The answer is, I'm not sure they will. An FHA loan, they would do that for you. Conventional lenders, they might, but or might not. Just depends who has your loan. So you could call, I would call the loan retention department, tell them you're thinking about lowering your interest rates or anything they'd like to do for you, and see what they offer you. And if they say, I'm sorry, we can't, you just have to refinance, then I would start shopping around and figuring out how to get one of those under 4% 15-year loans. So the next 15 years, you're paying off this house with less money. 28 minutes past the hour, I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
It's a losing game. 36 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Thanks for joining us here today. 404-872-0750. We're going to get back to your calls in just a moment. I want to talk for a little bit about the unemployment rate. So this week, again, we saw that the number of jobs has, you know, the unemployment rate is still extraordinarily high. It's still over 400,000 a week. That's a number that just cannot stand if we're going to get this unemployment thing. And so under control. And so what's happened is we've seen nationally the unemployment rate go up again from 9.1% to 9.2%. And when you look in Google today, like I'm looking right now, and I just say unemployment rate, up pops up that South Carolina's unemployment rate jumped to 10.5% in June. North Carolina's jobless rate, 9.9% in June. Nevada's jobless rate, 12.4%. Texas's unemployment rate, still a little bit below average, 8.2%. 8.2% is really high, folks. Maine is at 7.8%. At the very bottom, you have like North Dakota at 3.4%. So anybody who really likes snow and ice, you go to North Dakota, you'll get a job right away. Birmingham, Alabama rate jumped to 9.8%. Ohio's unemployment rate rose in June, the first increase in nearly 2 years, to 8.8%. And so when you start to look around the country and you see, like in Florida, I mean, just, you know, different counties' rates have gone up. It's really just somewhat terrifying. But worse is the long-term unemployment rate. I mean, the number of people who have been unemployed for years grown dramatically. The number of people who have been unemployed 6 months or more is over almost half. And so people are entering long-term unemployment and simply not finding anything new. There are no new jobs for them. And I know every week we have this conversation with somebody who says, I know people who are just freeloading and they don't want to get a new job, and I know there are jobs out there. Okay, I'm gonna say yes, there are some freeloaders out there. But there are also a large number of people who would like very much to get back to work and start paying their bills again. You know, there's a satisfaction about running your financial life in a reasonable way that I think adults really appreciate, and when that gets taken away from you and you can't pay your bills and you can't provide for your family, it's tremendously destructive. It's a hugely, hugely destructive force. And so I think when we look at this unemployment number and we start to think for a few minutes about what that really means to our economy and how we're going to figure out ways to get it back on track, I think we've got to do a little bit better job. I mean, there are all kinds of jobs, all kinds of money is being cut out of the federal deficit, and this takes us back to this whole conversation about how Washington is going to work. I think a lot of people in this country voted people in, Tea Party, Republican, Democrat. They wanted a change. Obama, they wanted a change. They wanted something different than what they were getting, and I think what they got is, I think, kind of more of the same. I hate the financial markets, if we don't hit August 2nd, are going to be absolutely roiled. So all the progress we made this week, we ended the week 12,681. You know, we're getting up near that high again from the low. You know, all of that is going to get unwound. And I think that the Republicans understand that. I think that we all need to understand that the cuts we make in the budget translate directly to people being unemployed. So if you cut $25 million out of a program to help poor, low-income children learn how to read, which I think is a huge investment in the national economy and the national wealth, which is a topic I want to talk about in a few minutes, you cut that money out, that's jobs. Those are people who are employed teaching low-income kids how to read and trying to boost their reading skills so they can actually do better in school and have better education so they can participate in the economy. We have to be very mindful, I think, about what we're cutting and what that means, because all this money means jobs. Some of it means profit, but all of it, I think, translates down to jobs. And so you cut big numbers, you're going to cut more people out of the employment rolls. And I just want to make sure everybody understands that that's really what we're talking about here. I'm not saying it doesn't need to be done, and I don't, you know, I'm surely it needs to be done in a thoughtful way, but money that comes out of the budget comes out in terms of jobs, and I'm very worried about what that's going to mean. 404-872-0750. All right, we got a whole bunch of calls. Let's see if we can get through a bunch in this segment. Sonia joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, Sonia.
Hi, how are you, Elise? Thanks for taking my call.
I'm good, and you're welcome. What's on your mind?
My daughter just turned 19, and she's starting her second year in college this year.
Great.
She has an annuity that comes in since last year when she turned 18. We're wondering if the best thing for her to do is to purchase a home outright where she is at school, because she's able to fund the annuity, versus throwing all that money into the dorm cost over the next 3 years. And not even that, there's a graduate school there as well that she could possibly go to when she's done.
Okay.
In middle Georgia. So we're not sure if this is the best way for her to, you know, have this money used. She has enough money to cover tuition in terms of scholarships, just room and board.
Okay. So I have to say, Sonia, that she doesn't know where she's going to want to be for sure in 3 years. So, and you don't know if this program, this graduate program, is going to be the perfect or best program for her.
Right.
Until you make that determination, I would not advise buying something, you know, where she's going to school, unless she feels pretty confident that she can get it rented and taken care of for the next 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
So if she's going to... If she's
that's
going,
another thing. We have a relative that lives in the area that's pretty much works in houses, and one of the secondary options too is for her to rent it out to, you know, preferably graduate level type students. So that was another thing that we discussed, that she could always rent it out to have, you know, some income coming in, but that's not the primary goal.
Well, I think there are better ways to make use of this money, frankly. I mean,
okay.
I think she could use the money to pay for her dorm cost.
Okay.
And even if that's, unless you're telling me that she can buy a place for, you know, $40,000 and there's two bedrooms and she can live in one and she's a friend who lives in the other, and that's what it's going to look like, you know,
pretty
really.
Pretty much so. The cost for the houses in the area, you know, in terms of space for her to be in a safe area, is anywhere under $30,000.
Okay. So, and how much is the cost of the dorms?
$10,000 each year for the next 3 years.
Okay. Then it's a no-brainer. So she should do that, and then she'll have it. And then if the relative wants to manage it for her and keep it rented for graduate students going forward, I think that's fine. And if she gets a two-bedroom and she lives in one and she rents out the other one to a friend for $5,000 a year, she's now really leveraged the investment.
Right, okay.
But it will need updating. If you have property taxes that you have to pay.
Right.
It's not like you're going to just use the $10,000 and apply it and completely pay it off, but you will, you will, you know, get pretty close to saving money. The ideal thing would be to spend $30,000 to buy it, and then the roommate pays $5,000 or $7,000 a year, so it's significantly less than the dorm, and that covers your taxes the updating, the insurance,
stamps, stuff like that.
You know, all the other stuff that you're going to need. And now it's, and then when she leaves and she gets two people in there at $7,000 each, you now have something that's actually bringing in some income. But this is trickier than it sounds. It sounds like it's not all that tricky, but I really would like you to think it through for your daughter. But she's in a situation where when, you know, the if she does end up staying for graduate school, then you've really made a smart investment. And she probably can always sell it for the same $30,000, or if she improves it, maybe a little bit more. So she'll probably get her money out of it. So really, it seems like a very good deal, but I'd like you to carefully investigate, as I always advise. Make sure you hire the right people to help you appraise it out and make sure she's getting a really good deal, and then figure out how to move forward from there. 404-872-0750. Jason joins us on the line now from Atlanta. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Wonderful. I have a question. I'm being pursued by an employer in the financial industry, but I'll be doing more so administrative tasks like an HR role.
Mm-hmm.
But I filed bankruptcy back in 2008. I filed Chapter 13 and subsequently later converted to Chapter 7. Would that affect my my potential employment with this employer?
It might. Do they actually take a look at your credit yet?
They have taken a look at my credit. They took a look at my credit on Wednesday because I received a notification via mail. And but I subsequently talked to them after that, you know, just, you know, she, we were in communication basically saying that, you know, she's going to be scheduling interviews the following week.
Did they bring it up?
No.
I got to say, you know, I don't know that having filed for bankruptcy would, you know, get in the way of you getting a job at a financial company, maybe, but doing HR, I don't know. I guess you're going to have to come up with a really good story for why you ended up filing for bankruptcy and why your finances went into such a tailspin.
Right, right.
So do you have a story like that? And I don't mean make up a story. I mean be able to convey in a proper way and a thoughtful way why you ended up choosing and going down that path.
I mean, it's because of basically the layoffs and then underemployment after the layoff.
I think people understand that, but you know, you have to tell the story of it, right? So if you're asked what happened, I think answering it was basically layoffs and underemployment is the beginning of a story.
Uh-huh.
But I think you need to sort of, and this is what I encourage people when they go to interview for jobs. You have to turn that lesson into something that you've learned that's positive that's going to help them in this new job that you're going to take on.
Right.
Like, what lessons have you learned from your bankruptcy and what you've been doing to pull your life back together will show them that you are an exceptional candidate for this job.
Absolutely.
That's what I mean by telling a story. And you have to rehearse this. You have to think about it and practice it. You may even need to write it out. And you have to internalize it. And I think you might want to even, if they don't bring it up at your, you know, at your interview, I think I might even want to bring it up.
Okay.
Because they've seen it, and, you know, you're competing against people who didn't go into bankruptcy.
Okay.
So I think you're going to have to judge it when you're there. Because if they haven't seen it, and let's say HR pulled it, but the person interviewing you hasn't seen it and isn't going to make the decision based on that, then bringing it up could be trouble. But I think I would try to open the door. Is there anything else you would like to ask me about my past that I could answer for you?
Okay.
And then come up, you know, with this story, this telling the story about, and the moral of the story is, here's what I've learned, and this is how I'm going to make, and this is why I'm going to be an exceptional employee for you.
Okay.
Whether it's because you're much more sensitive to people's financial circumstances, I don't know what the answer to it is, but you know what happened, so that's really the best thing that you can do.
Okay.
All right, does that make sense?
That does, actually.
I wish that there was sort of another way to do it. And it's really delicate, and I'm sure you've been applying for lots and lots of jobs.
Absolutely.
But it's, you know, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Exactly. Okay.
All right. Good luck. Let me know how it goes. Send me an email,
thank
okay?
You. Thanks for the advice.
All right. Take care.
All right. Good day.
It's 49 minutes past the hour. You know, I'm sure we'll hear from somebody who's on the HR side. And really, I would welcome it. If you're in HR and you've had this situation where you found an employee, a potential employee you really like, but they have this kind of big black mark, how do you advise that they deal with it? 404-872-0750. I understand it's just it's absolutely a disqualifying thing for some financial companies, but in others it might not be. And so it's important to understand where that places you and how to make yourself seem like an absolutely incredible employee, future employee, so that even with this black mark, you would be an acceptable person for them. Really interested to hear. So if you're in that situation on the other side, on the company side, let us know what happened. 404-872-0750. We have the latest news, weather, and traffic coming up at the top of the hour. And for in-depth news coverage, today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution has a special report that exposes the questionable uses of your tax dollars spent by the state university system. It's a good one. It's 10 before the hour on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
And yourself, I understand. A man confused.
55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, just tweeting with some folks. We're hearing some positive things about our little Amy Winehouse tribute today, so thanks so much for that. Glad you guys are listening. I was saying that it's so sad to me when somebody who's so hugely talented just self-destructs, and unfortunately we seem to be witnessing that more and more these days. 404-872-0750. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. You can be a Facebook fan. We've got a fan page that we're always trying to fill out and build. You can follow me at moneywatch.com. And, of course, the Equifax personal finance blog, where we are writing some really cool stuff. That blog is about to get a huge makeover in the next 2 weeks. I think you're going to really love the changes that we're doing and bringing in. We have so many new voices. We've got so much amazing information. And where else on the web can you talk directly to somebody who works for a credit reporting bureau? Nowhere else, just on the Equifax personal finance blog. So check it out at equifax.com/blog. 404-872-0750. It is 56 minutes past the hour. Taking your calls, Gary joins us on the line. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Hi, what's on your mind?
I have a piece of property that I have for sale, and I just got an offer. And the one thing that has me a little concerned is they are going for a USDA loan, and just what little I've read about them, there can be some weird things about it, and I just wonder if you can give me any things I ought to be aware of that could be make it tough for the buyer to get the loan or make it tough for me in selling the house on a USDA loan.
I love USDA loans. They're one of the true 100% loans left in this country.
Yeah, I found that out.
They've poured some money into it,
yep.
Program. They've really been beefing it up. If you are in a rural area, I assume you're in a rural area of Atlanta.
Well, the house is, yeah.
The house is. And I don't know, there are some income requirements, location requirements, but if your buyers meet those, I don't think you're going to have much of a problem there. Now,
okay.
We may have to kick in some for closing costs, but you might have done that anyway.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. No, they actually already did get pre-qualified, and looks like they can do it.
Good.
Now, I saw but I just thought I found some kind of a checklist out there on this USDA site saying things that have to be there, like energy-efficient windows and doors and, a bunch of things like that. And I thought, ooh, this would be...
I think those are all those things. Yeah, there are different versions of USDA loans.
Okay.
So that, I think, might be an energy-efficient USDA loan. There's a lot of different stuff. I don't think you're going to have a problem, but if you're concerned about it, I really don't think you're going to have a problem. There are a lot of people who use these loans, hundreds of thousands of them.
Okay.
But if you're worried about it, you can keep... Do you have another offer out there that's better, that doesn't have a USDA loan?
Yeah.
So if you have another loan, if you have another offer out there, take the other offer. And if not, do what you can to make this one work, because I think offers are few and far between.
That's okay.
All right.
Thanks.
You're welcome, Gary. Good luck with that. 58 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB. Brought to you by Mark Tytel with Realty First.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. It is 6 minutes past the hour. Mark Tytel of GetOutStartOver.com will be here in a little bit. He's got some really interesting stats about how short sales and foreclosures affect your credit history and credit score, and why, even though it seems like it might be the same, you might want to choose a short sale over a foreclosure. I would any day of the week. And I will talk a little bit more about that process, because my husband Sam, the real estate attorney, has run into it himself with a short sale deal that he's representing, and the banks just make this stuff much tougher than it has to be. We're also taking your calls, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Lots to get through this hour, tons. In fact, let's start with the countrywide mortgage deal. The OCC and the Federal Trade Commission announced plans to return $108 million to more than 450,000 homeowners who were overcharged by Countrywide, a unit of Bank of America, for loan servicing fees. Now, this was the settlement that they reached with Countrywide last year, of course, you know, no blame assigned, over allegations that the company collected excessive fees from borrowers who were facing foreclosure. These are the people who are supposed to be getting the money back. As part of its efforts to protect financially distressed homeowners, the FTC is distributing refunds to consumers whose loans were serviced between January 1st, 2005 and July 1st of 2008. January 1st of 2005 to July 1st of 2008. The FTC complaint alleged that Countrywide's business strategy was to increase profits from default-related services by taking advantage of those homeowners who had defaulted. Shocking. Shocking. I want to just be clear. This is well before Bank of America bought Countrywide. They didn't know. I don't believe they knew about this when they bought Countrywide. But so this is pre-Bank of America. This is strictly Countrywide Financial. Okay? Now, the consumers were charged excessive fees for services meant to protect Countrywide's interest in the property, including lawn mowing and property inspection services. Instead of hiring third-party vendors to perform the services, Countrywide used subsidiaries, which marked up the prices of these services by 100% or more that was passed through by Countrywide to the at-risk consumers. FTC Chairman John Leibovitz said, "It is astonishing that a single company could be responsible for overcharging more than 450,000 homeowners. He continued, quote, "Countrywide's unconscionable behavior harmed American consumers on a massive scale, and we are proud to be getting every single dollar back to hundreds of thousands of struggling homeowners who can least afford to lose the money." The FTC also alleges that Countrywide passed on fees and escrow charges to consumers going through Chapter 13 bankruptcy without notifying them. These homeowners will also receive refunds, along with those who are overcharged for the property inspections, maintenance services, title searches, and foreclosure trustee services. Now, the checks will range from less than $500 into the thousands of dollars. And if you are receiving a refund check, you should expect to cash them by September 19th. Okay, so it's between $500 and thousands of dollars. And if you qualify, they're going to get this to you soon. And you should cash it immediately. Do not hang on to these checks, folks. Do not hang on to them. Just cash them. Now, Bank of America, again, put up a statement. I put it up at moneywatch.com. If you are a former Countrywide customer, if you fall into the January 1st, 2005 to July 1st, 2008, you can call this number to find out if you are covered by this settlement. The number is toll-free, 888-230-3196. 888-230-3196. 6. Or you can just go to the FTC's Countrywide Settlement page. I have the phone number and the website linked to MoneyWatch.com. So go look up my stuff at MoneyWatch, and you'll see the Countrywide $108 million settlement. And then all the information you need is right at the bottom of that story. So you can just go there and pass right on to it. And hopefully, you know, if you qualify, hopefully you're going to get your check. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Carrie joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, Elise.
How are you?
Very well, thank you, ma'am.
Good.
I am about to inherit a nice house, and so my house is up for grabs. I can either sell it or I can rent it out. And
okay.
What are the pros and cons and the do's and don'ts of renting versus selling?
Well, do you have it in you to be a landlord? Not everybody does, you know.
Not really. But I could give it to a company to do it for me.
Yeah, companies take a big chunk of the money. So then the question is, is the house paid off? Can you afford to do that?
Yes, the house is paid for.
Okay. So you can have a company do it. But I got to tell you, management companies are not great. Not all of them. Some of them are good. Some of them are not so good. Even the good ones make mistakes. And so anytime you have a financial asset and you parcel out that asset for management by somebody else, you pay for it, and you still have to follow along and make sure it's being done correctly. So if you're going to find a management company, they'll probably take 1 to 2 months' rent per year to manage the property. Sometimes they just take 10% or higher of all the proceeds that come in. Okay? Selling, I think, is probably a great idea if you can sell and if the house is in a great area. So I was talking about my neighbors, and they literally got an offer within 24 hours, which proves that if your house looks amazing and you price it right, you will sell it. But if you feel like the price has come down a lot and you don't really want to sell it for that price, or you don't think you could sell it, then I would definitely do the renting.
Well, in my case, the house is in an area that has not gone up a lot in the past decade or so, so it hasn't gone down much either.
Okay. And would you be satisfied? Do you think you could sell it?
Oh, sure.
So I would sell it and get rid of it.
Okay.
I would take the cash and I would go invest it somewhere else. Because I think long term, you know, what are you looking at in terms of getting, you know, what's the rate of return on the house, right? The house is going to need improvements. It's going to need maintenance. You're going to still have to pay the taxes on it, the insurance on it. Now you're going to pay to manage it. So maybe you're going to spend 55-60% of all the money that comes in on those things. And then if something really terrible happens, or you really need to replace a roof or something big, it's going to eat up all your profits. So I kind of think that over the long run, you got to want to be in it to do the active hands-on managing to get the tax benefits and to really make sure the property is being run right. And if you don't have it in you to be a landlord, you shouldn't do it.
What about the tax benefits?
Well, if you are a direct landlord, and depending on how much you earn, and the property becomes a commercial property or investment property, you may be able to write off as an ongoing basis the depreciation versus not being an active manager and only being able to write it off when you sell the property.
Okay.
So you would want to talk to your tax advisor. It depends on a bunch of things like your income and what you do for a living and what you don't do for a living. And there's a complicated formula.
And versus that, of course, you don't get the tax benefit of selling your main property when you sell it.
Right. I mean, you sell this house now and you're living in it and it's your primary residence, you get to keep the profits tax-free.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it turns into an investment property and there are any profits, then what you're going to have to do is a 1031 tax-free exchange so that you can buy a different property. Or you'll have to pay the taxes and then the recapture of the depreciation later.
Lovely. Okay.
So it's complicated. It's not that easy. But my first choice for you would be sell it, and especially because you just said you don't really have the stomach for being a landlord.
My father was a landlord for many years, and I never saw him at nights.
Oh, well, why would you want to do that?
Hmm?
Why would you want to do that?
My father was a landlord. He ran a bunch of properties.
Yeah.
And he was never home at nights.
Right. So I understand completely why it's not that palatable to you.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you try and sell this thing?
Okay.
All right?
Thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Have a great afternoon. 15 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. David joins us on the line. Hi, David.
Hey, Lisa. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. What's on your mind? How can I help?
Well, in 2007, I was put in a position where a larger company took over my smaller company's operation, and I had to choose. I could walk out the door unemployed or stay on with them at an entry-level position. So at that point in time, with the bills I had to pay plus child support, I had to pick and choose who was going to get paid. So over a short period of time, none of my credit cards got paid. And I've just now got to a point where I can begin to address those. But I make too much money to file for bankruptcy. And prior to that, I just didn't make enough money where I could even pay a bankruptcy attorney.
Okay.
And just recently, one of the smaller credit card accounts was turned over to a local attorney's office, which has kind of prompted my call, is because now I'm afraid that this attorney is going to come after me for everything he can get, plus attorney fees that are skyrocket high and court costs.
Okay.
So that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm not sure which direction to turn. I think I've got four different credit cards up to like almost $32,000,
$33,000. And how much?
That I need, $33,000 I need to deal with.
And how much do you make?
With the special projects right now, I'm about $50,000 a year.
Okay. Have you thought about going to Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta, which is now called Credibility.org?
I've thought about the different agencies, but I didn't know which one's reputable versus another one.
Sure. So Credibility is the one that I actually sit on the advisory board for them, and Clark Howard used to be on the board of directors.
Yeah.
They're the ones that you go to.
Consumer Credibility?
It's called Credibility.org. It's the former Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta. But if
right.
you type in Credibility, credability.org, you'll get to their website. And what I would do is to make an appointment with them. They're the ones who charge, the least amount. They're the ones who... They are the standard bearers for really credit counseling, nonprofit credit counseling agencies. Their people are really well trained, and so I would start there, and I would go in and have an initial conversation with them about your situation and see what they advise.
Okay.
And then you can decide. A debt management plan will put you out of debt in 3 to 4 years, which would be great. Without going into bankruptcy, it'll start to heal your credit. And it should help you negotiate and take care of this guy, this collections, because they'll help contact all of your creditors.
Right.
So that would be one way to go. And then have you now spoken with a bankruptcy attorney who says you make too much money to file for bankruptcy?
No. When I finally decided I was going to move forward with bankruptcy, I could have filed bankruptcy, but I just wasn't earning enough money to pay a bankruptcy attorney the minimum amount
that they
wanted in installments. So
yeah.
I was like, okay, and kept moving forward until here I am. Now I think I'm...
Well, I would, before you know, there are a lot of really rich people who file for bankruptcy protection. So, and people who earn a lot of money get to file for bankruptcy protection. So I think now that you have more money, you should talk to a bankruptcy attorney about that.
Well, they told me that you... If you make more than $4,400 a month, then you can't file.
Well, there are some limitations, but I think you might... Well, you would need a bankruptcy certificate anyway. So start with Credibility, because they offer the bankruptcy credit. They understand all the bankruptcy rules, and they'll be able to tell you whether they think you can or you can't. Typically,
right.
when somebody has almost 100% of their annual salary and credit card debt, they encourage you to think about it.
Right.
So you're close to that.
Right.
So I think you want to talk to them about what's going on, and I would just start there. And you'll get some good advice, and then you can start to consider your different options.
Okay. We
All
can
right?
do that. All right, thanks.
You're welcome. Good luck, David. It is 20 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show. 404-872-0750 is our number. When we come back, we've got an amazing prize pack to give away today. Huge value. Great tickets. Stay tuned for that and more on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Kling is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
6 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750 on News Talk WSB. We've got an amazing prize pack. I think this might be the most valuable prize pack we have ever given away. It includes a... it says a table for four. That could be cool. Or for sure, tickets for four to see Brian Wilson in concert August 3rd at Chastain Park Amphitheater, presented by ASO Presents. A pair of tickets to see Cirque du Soleil August 25th through the 28th at Phillips Arena, or August 31st through September 4th at the Gwinnett Arena. A gift certificate for a full house plumbing inspection courtesy of Superior Plumbing, and a pair of tickets to see Mary Chapin Carpenter in concert August 13th at Chastain Park Amphitheater, presented by ASO Presents. Wow, this is amazing. And if you go to Mary Chapin Carpenter and you win this, you might see Crystal Wheeler, because she just told me she got a pair of tickets too. Prize pack value for today's WSB McDonald's weekend prize pack, $730. How are you going to get it? Oh, Crystal tells me it is a table for four to see Brian Wilson in concert. Who knows? Maybe it's up on the stage. I don't know. All right, how you get this thing? You have to be the fifth caller on the prize pack line, 404-741-0750. Be nice to Clint. He is the one taking your calls today. Good luck, everybody. All right, 27 minutes past the hour. Let's see if we can take another couple of calls here. Maggie joins us on the line from Smyrna. Hi, Maggie.
Hello there. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing good. I have a question for you about a house I have built in the 1950s.
Okay.
And I need to sell it because I want to relocate. It hasn't been renovated. Everything in the inside the house is original 50s, kitchen, bath, everything.
Okay. Sometimes people really like that, by the way.
Yeah, I'm wondering in today's market, and maybe you've already answering my question there, if it's worth trying to invest to renovate, which would cost an awful lot of money, and hope that in today's real estate market I would receive, what I had put into the house or more, or at least the profit. And I'm inclined to think I'm best off by selling it as is. What are your thoughts?
I would try and sell it as is. If you try to build a kitchen to today's standard and you try to do baths, you're going to end up spending $50,000 to $100,000, maybe even $150,000. I don't think in today's market in Atlanta, almost, unless you're telling me this house is probably worth $1 million, would that be worthwhile? So,
no, it's not worth $1 million.
Okay, so then if it's not, I think trying to spend that money to change something that might actually be valued by somebody, I probably wouldn't do much. But I'd try and stage it, make it look as good as you possibly can. And to do that, you're going to want to have the help of a really good stager and really good agent who can help make this house seem really fabulous. And if you want a 1950s house in original mint condition, this is the house that you want to buy. That, I think, is going to be your marketing edge. So I would try that and find an agent who really gets it. 404-872-0750, 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
It's okay in the day. I'm staying busy.
36 minutes past the hour, listening to a little Amy Winehouse in tribute, really, to her great, great talent. Unfortunately, she passed away yesterday at the age of 27. Oh, what a loss. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Emily of Lilburn won that absolutely amazing prize pack valued at $730. Congratulations, Emily. Great concerts in there as well, which is going to be great. We've got Mark Titel of GetOutStartOver.com getting into the studio, getting ready. We're going to talk to him in a few minutes. I thought maybe we would get to the rest of our phone calls before then. If you've got a question for me, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Marianne joins us on the line from Tucker. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, Elise. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Okay. I'm going to inherit a house that is probably $40,000 underwater.
Ooh.
Do I have to accept it?
No.
Okay.
It's sort of
how
amazing.
How do I go about not accepting it?
You just tell them that you don't accept the inheritance. Just because somebody wants to give you something doesn't mean you have to say yes.
Okay.
So
that's
you're going to
leave big off my mind.
Sure. I mean, why would you want to take that on? So
I don't.
Yeah. No. Exactly. So you probably want to chat with the I don't know, the person who's running the estate, the executor,
mm-hmm.
or if there's an attorney involved, and just let them know that you will not be taking possession of this gift.
Now, but I could accept other things they were leaving me.
Yes.
Oh,
you can,
okay.
You
okay.
can pick and choose.
But that can be excluded.
Yes, that can
Thank
be
you
excluded.
So much. That's all I needed.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, well, have a good day.
Thanks, you
Bye-bye.
Too. 38 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Stanley joins us on the line from Ackworth. Hey, Stanley.
Hey, I appreciate you taking my call. I had a question. A couple of years ago, my daughter and son-in-law got into some difficult financial problem. They lost their house. And in that situation, I bought a condominium for them and moved them and their grandchildren in. And in the meantime, they have been paying me a monthly amount to be applied to the down payment of the house where they, when they get into position where they can take it over themselves. And I just wanted to know if there was anything related to that process that I needed to know about in addition to what I've done, the kind of records I need to keep and so forth.
Well, I think what you're talking about is what price you're going to sell them the house. So if they
yeah.
did a...
It will be at the exact same amount that it cost me to buy the house.
Sure. So if you're doing a, well, it is and it isn't, right? Because if it's a rent to own, which is what this is, right? And you have the price set at the beginning in the document, the lease with an option, you can say, and this, the money that they pay each month gets credited towards the down payment.
Uh-huh.
When they go to qualify for a loan, they're going to have to show that money has been earned in some way. Right, so either you lower the price of the property by the amount that they've put as the down payment, or you're going to have to give them a check for that money so that they can use it to give it right back to you as the down payment.
Okay, well, what the plan was, and let's say that it was $155,000, and they are paying me $1,000 a month. And each month I might make a record and give it to them that it is reduced. That amount has been applied as the down payment, and of course the price, the final payment to me would be whatever that total amount is, taken off of the $155,000 to begin with. So it's just.
So how many years has it been? Because that's $12,000 a year that they're paying.
Yeah,
so,
well, in some months they weren't able to make the payment at the beginning, and then she's had some major medical problems, and so it's. But I think that they have made probably in the 2.5 years, I think maybe they missed maybe 4 payments out of that.
Okay, so basically they've paid you $24,000, maybe $26,000?
Well, somewhere to that effect, right.
So nearly 20% down.
Yeah.
Okay, and are they in any position yet? It doesn't. If they just went into foreclosure three years ago, they would not be able to qualify right now for a loan, correct?
That, and in addition to that, they had a bankruptcy that followed the foreclosure. So
okay. So they've got 5 years out before they can qualify for a loan, unless you want to give them a loan. You know, there's a couple of things you can do here.
Okay.
One is that you can literally change the contract to read that they are buying this house from you
mm-hmm.
on an installment basis.
Okay.
And every month they're buying another piece of it. They've already bought about 20% of it.
Okay. Well, it wouldn't be quite 20% of $155,000.
No, but it's
that's not an issue.
It's about 16-17% at the moment,
right,
roughly.
Right.
But
uh-huh.
you know, if they've got another, let's say, 4 years to go till they qualify, okay, in 4 years, 4 more years,
mm-hmm.
They'll pay another $48,000. Let's say they're now making their payments.
Okay.
So the $48,000 plus the $24,000 is 48 and 20, 72,000. That's almost half of the value of the condo.
Uh-huh.
So now let's say instead of, now they want to, you know, and they've now bought half of it, so they own half of it. So you could either sell them the other half in 5 years and they can get either a loan for it, or you can take back the loan.
Mm-hmm.
And they can just keep paying it off at the rate of $12,000 a year.
Okay.
So there's a number of ways that you can document this.
Okay.
And you know, I mean, seriously, in 10 years, basically, they'll have almost paid off the whole house.
Right.
So I think you just want to think it through.
Okay. I'm charging some interest, which is nothing more than I would get on a CD, which is virtually nothing, as you know right now.
Right.
And that has to do with how I want to arrange it in the will to make sure that everybody's treated fairly.
Sure.
But essentially, what the fact that she's just paying me she's paying me back in the process of buying the home. I'm not making any money on it, and don't want to make any money on it.
Okay.
So essentially, we just need to put that into a contract reflecting that, and then keep up with the payments.
Exactly, okay. And then you're going to want, if you decide to go with the installment sale method, you'll want to file those papers in court at the public recorder of deeds, so that the world is on notice that that's what's happening. It gives them some rights, it gives you some rights. But you want to talk to a real estate attorney about this, so that they can draw up papers that protect you.
Okay. Now,
because
when you say
in the event, and this is what you have to think about, in the event that they go bankrupt again or she gets sick again and they fall off, you know, the wagon, if they own half this property and they owe medical bills, they, you know, their creditors can come after this property. So
yeah, well, that was the one thing that I wanted to make sure that was protected.
Right. And the only way you can do that is to really think through all of the different issues with a real estate attorney and try and figure out what's going to be best. Is it best for you to own this and it goes into a trust and she's the beneficiary? Is it best that it's, you know, you're doing an installment sale? Is it best that you just own it and they're making payments, and at the end of the 12 or 15 years, then they get it outright? Like, you have to really think about what's in your best interest and what's in their best interest. And you have to, since they've had some financial and medical problems, think about how you're protecting the asset that you are trying to give to them.
Okay.
All right?
So I really need to go to a real estate attorney.
You got to go to somebody who can help you think this through and who has the legal knowledge to enact whatever decisions you make.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you.
You're very welcome, Stanley. I hope it goes well. 45 and a half or so minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Kling. Thanks for listening. 404-872-0750. Chris joins us on the line. Hi, Chris. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
So I got a question. I got my wife's company is canceling their 401k.
Really?
Yeah, okay. And they're not even giving them the option to contribute to it anymore.
Okay.
If he has about $12,000 spread out and some stuff, you know, within that she's been contributing to it. And I'm wondering what the best thing to do would be. Like, what's the best course of action to take?
Well, first of all, if they're canceling the 401k, I assume she's going to be given the opportunity to roll her $12,000 into an IRA. So that's what she should do. Don't take out the money. She should roll it into another qualified retirement vehicle, an IRA. And she needs to open that up at a place like Fidelity or Charles Schwab or Vanguard, and then do a trustee-to-trustee transfer so that she doesn't physically touch the money and she doesn't have to pay the taxes on it.
Okay.
Right? Once it's in a protected state, now she can do... She can invest it all in index funds, which are cheap and easy to own and give her a tremendous amount of coverage. She can buy stocks with it, whatever she wants. But it's really important that she get the $12,000 and roll that over.
So you think we need to go to, like, Fidelity or a credit union like that?
Yeah. I wouldn't do a credit union.
What about a normal bank like Bank of America?
They have some mutual funds, but I think you're best served by going to a mutual fund company with retirement money. So I would rather see you go to Vanguard or Fidelity or Charles Schwab, where you get a ton of really, really good, cheap index mutual funds.
Yeah.
That are like almost free to own. They're so cheap.
Okay.
I would much rather you do that.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I mean, it's unfortunate that they feel that they can't afford it and they need to do something like this. And I wish they didn't. Obviously, they must be in trouble. Does she have bigger problems on coming forward, like she's going to need to look for a new job?
I asked her, you know, I was like, that sounds like to me they're about to close the door. If, you know,
yeah.
Because apparently she quit paying and she was matching it up to about a year ago and she quit paying that.
Matching is different. A lot of companies stop matching, but not matching is a sign of financial trouble. And closing the 401k is a sign of, I think, financial trouble. So I would make sure that her, you know, that she has made all of the tax payments that she's supposed to make. And if there's a way to find out and make sure that your wife is current, she should, and she should maybe think about what's going on with the company and try to get a little bit of information and start thinking about whether she needs to update her resume.
Yeah.
Sorry to kind of throw that out there, but sounds to me like your wife's boss might be in a bit of trouble, and she needs to look out for herself and you and figure out where she's going to be before she becomes another statistic. And she should really move on getting that new account open. She should do it tomorrow to get that money transferred out of there so it doesn't get bogged down just in case the company goes under. The latest news, weather, and traffic coming up at the top of the hour. We also want to remind you to pick up your Sunday Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There's a special report that exposes questionable uses of your tax dollars spent by the state university system. It is 10 minutes before the hour on AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Magic of your time. 54 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us today. Mark Titel from GetOutStartOver.com is in the studio with us to tell us what's going on in his office with short sales and foreclosures. He is our guy on the ground. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So, Mark, we were talking earlier in the show. We had a caller who has had a foreclosure and then went into bankruptcy, and we were talking about how that degrades credit. And short sales and foreclosures both degrade FICO scores. I understand from FICO that that is approximately 150 to 175 points. From your point of view, why is it better for people to try a short sale if the point differential is going to be the same on the credit score?
Well, the most important thing what helps the borrowers is that at the time of the short sale, they can negotiate with the lender, the short lender, to make sure that that is payoff, whatever they get from the closing, is final settlement. That means that they waive their right to seek the deficiency balance thereafter.
Yes, it's really important to get your lender to agree to that because you don't want them coming afterwards after you down the line or selling it to a collection agency, that's for sure. Now, with a foreclosure, can it work the same way or not really?
Not really. The borrower has no right to say anything about that. And the foreclosure, after the foreclosure, anytime they can come after you for the deficiency balance.
Okay. So the short sale, one benefit is that you can get the lender to say this is the final balance and we're all done. And, of course, if you do a short sale or a foreclosure through 2013, then you don't pay the IRS on the back of it, which is always a good thing as well, as long as it's your primary residence. What about the whole, you talk from time to time about how some of your short sellers are getting relocation assistance through the Home Affordable Foreclosure Alternative. How does that actually work?
At the time of closing, if you qualify for Home Affordable Foreclosure Alternative Program, you receive a check in amount up to $3,000 to relocate. Now, HUD may have a different program and they offer up to $1,500 relocation assistance money. But you walk away, signing your home away, giving the keys to new buyer and holding a check to assist you to relocate to another property and move where you have to go next.
So how do you know if you qualify for that, and how can you apply for it?
First of all, when you actually go for a short sale and you submit all the paperwork, the first thing we do in our office is request a HAFA qualification. We apply, submit the form to them, and see if you can qualify. If they say, no, you are not qualified for HAFA, then we ask, when will you qualify through the investor that holds your note, if they offer any kind of relocation assistance money. And sometimes you'll be surprised. Investors even offering more money than HAFA. They offer $5,000 or $7,000 relocation assistance, depending on how big your house is, how expensive it is, and how much more money you'll have to spend on move-out.
And really, when they say it's relocation assistance, what they're really saying is, take this money and don't destroy it, the house, because you're so angry and upset and before you leave. Isn't that really what they're doing?
That's great. There are a lot of vandalism.
They're assisting you with the emotions that are evoked with the relocation of your life.
Yeah, I think so, too. There are some part in that, but some people really need some help and they're looking way out, and that money really comes handy. So I think encourage everyone who has an opportunity, who has a qualifying cause that will approve their short sale, to go for it, apply for it, because not only you're going to settle the debt at the time of closing, but you may get some money to relocate.
What is the website? Do you happen to know? Is it HAFA.gov?
That's correct. You can go to Home Affordable Foreclosure Alternative Program website, and you have different kind of ways of looking for, because each state has own different program.
Okay, well, we will put up that website for you and so that you'll be able to see it and know that it's out there for you, folks. Mark Titel, thank you so much for joining us. You'll be back again next week, of course. The music is playing. That means our time is up. Folks, thank you so much for being with us today on the Elise Link Show. Time has really flown by. We'll try to put up some show notes up at thinklink.com. Check out today's blog. I'll get that to that maybe a little later on today. In the meantime, go and enjoy the weather and enjoy the day. Have a great week. See you again soon.